Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And we have a very special show. We have a special guest. It will be Mitchell Nicholas Gerber. We'll have him on in the next segment, but I'll get more to that a little bit later in this segment. But first, I have to assert that you are listening to the only show on air that actually provides a constitutional solution in getting the federal government into compliance. This is precisely what Jefferson and Madison attempted, and that's why this is brought to you by 1798part2.org. The show is also sponsored by reclaimingtherepublic.org as well as republicreview.org. And so the number to call in is 215-867-8255. And so my focus of this show, if you didn't know, my focus is really on those state legislators because I'm laser focused on trying to teach the 5,445 legislators throughout the Republic that they possess the authority over the Constitution, and they have the power and authority to force compliance. We just need to coalesce and pull the Republic together because a state alone cannot do it. A state alone can initiate it, and I believe that when one state stands up, it will be very easy for many and the rest of the states to stand up. They do not. I repeat, the states do not have to apply to Congress to enforce their own contract. That would be the antithesis of understanding the stakeholders of a contract and the subcontractor relationship. The only time a state has to apply to Congress is if the states choose to exercise a unique function of amending the contract on their own. And that would be a two-thirds majority, which would be 34 states would have to apply to be able to get that that clearance, I should say, because once you have 34 states doing this, then Congress is supposed to set aside a point in time as well as a place. But here's the problem with the Convention of States. And if you're a Convention of States follower, supporter, you're paying into it. Tell me how much time, because bottom line, the Convention of States movement, this effort has been going on for 3 decades, if not longer. And by now, one should have clearly worked out everything necessary to be able to put forth an amendment. And bottom line, the process before for the states in getting an amendment through was directly to going to Congress and saying, you need to do this, and then creating enough support at the state level, such as prohibition, such as the 17th Amendment. Believe it or not, the 17th Amendment came from state pressures. The 16th Amendment came from Wilson because he was spending us into oblivion, and he convinced everybody that it was going to be a short-term deal. However, they didn't put a sunset on it, and nor did they put a cutback on spending. So with that being said, there is, hate to say it, because I know there's a lot of good people that are very passionate because they believe that the Article 5 process is the way to go. They've been completely sold a bill of goods. But bottom line, if you are an Article 5 person, you believe that that is the only process to go, then give me the plan. Because even before the Constitutional Convention, Madison had a plan. Madison completely promulgated that plan throughout Virginia, and many people were aware of his plan. It wasn't a bamboozling. And what we have is if there is no plan after 3 decades, I'm sorry, then I have to question the integrity and the character of the individuals calling for this. This is not something you say, well, let's get together and discuss it. No, you start putting the ideas out. You start finding what sticks to the walls and what gets everybody on board. There's a lot of people that are saying term limits, but I'm going to ask you this. Will term limits take away the Department of Education? Will it strip out Obamacare and the Health and Human Services? Will it get rid of all of the unconstitutional government? Nope. Then it really isn't a solution. It may be a paradigm of shifting powers or making it so that you can't have long-term servants, you know, like John Quincy Adams was a long-term servant, or even James Madison himself was a long-term servant. But that being said, give me the plan. Give us the plan. You've been at this for such a long time. And if you understand their intent, they have discussion topics. They have areas of interest that they want to explore once the convention kicks off. That's how nefarious this is. I can't even believe that they've got one state to agree with this. I think that there was noble intent, and I believe that those initial states that got on board with this, now that things have changed significantly, I think there is a good possibility that they can be convinced to rescind their application. Because you can't tell me that you've been thinking about something for 30. I've been thinking about the problems with the Constitution since the 80s. I was actually in the camp of the constitutional Article 5 process. Until I realized that there is, because bottom line, I was thinking of what is the amendment that can force the federal government to comply. Well, there isn't. The Constitution is very clear that they only have limited powers. And therefore, the federal government has to comply to the Constitution. But what's the process in getting them to comply? It is not an amendment. Anybody that tells you that they need to convene a convention is a self-serving person, because I truly believe there is no intent to actually come forth with the silver bullet that will save all of our problems, save us from everything. They don't have one. They can't produce one. And there will never be one, because if you look at the Constitution, the way it is limited and defined, and the way they defined it in the ratification debates, as I have gone through this with you, and I ask you to listen to my podcast when I talk about the ratification debates, it's very clear. The federal government is way outside the scope of the Constitution, and therefore, what we have to do is we have to force the compliance. There is only one process to do that. That process literally is what James Madison and Thomas Jefferson did in 1798. If you want to get a glimpse of this, go read Jefferson's book on the Notes on the State of Virginia and understand that that was written in the context of Virginia and maintaining compliance to the Virginia Constitution. So the Republic is a lot different. It's configured a lot different. And ergo, it is more important to understand in context how that plan would work. So if one would read Thomas Jefferson and James Madison's resolutions of 1798, you will clearly understand that exactly what they did was they audited the Constitution. They called out the violations. They called out the restrictions of power, so forth and so on, that would come out of an audit. And then they called for all the states to step in and coalesce and join together in rebuking and basically admonishing and forcing the federal government into compliance. And there are tools and processes of how to do that. That's why this show is dedicated in educating these state legislators. And if you understand the Article 5 process, Republic Review doesn't necessarily kill it. We're not removing that. If there is a role, responsibility, or power that the states deem that they want to keep, then they can either recommend it or they can convene their own convention. But, I mean, why would you put the cart in front of the horse? Let's get compliance first. And if there's things we need to fix, then we fix that in the process of getting compliance. If we don't get compliance, my friends, the debt will continue to rack up. Government overreach will continue to get into every facet of our lives. And even worse, this Trump effect. If you don't understand, we'll get into it maybe after into the second segment. If not, we'll definitely spend a lot of time tomorrow getting into the Trump effect, the ramifications of the upcoming election, as well as, you know, how this can all play out. My friends, if you do not understand the importance in getting behind Republic Review and standing up and supporting this, I'm not asking you to give me money. I'm just asking that you put your two cents in, whether that would be with time, whether that be with your efforts in emailing. You've got a computer. You can use social media. We need help. And so, therefore, I am groveling, as always, to get your help. I don't know what it will take. I understand that it requires some level of marketing. I understand that it requires some form of motivation to get people to put some skin in the game. But if you do not understand what will happen when the progressives take over and how fast we will go down that gravy train again in giving everybody your goods and your hard-earned money, because the time is coming when they have to ramp up taxation, and their time is also coming when they will have to set aside the Constitution, because some of the stuff that they still need to do, like confiscating guns and everything else, they're going to have to put aside the Constitution to do all of that. And when they do, it will not come back. Because at that point in time, if you don't understand that there's these globalist plans, if you don't understand the Agenda 21, this is not conspiracy stuff. Go talk to anybody, read any book, like from Tom DeWeese. There's plenty of books out there, and I'm actually going to get a local Agenda 21 person, hopefully, onto this show so that we can talk in detail regarding, and as a matter of fact, Paul Preston, he's on Red State Talk Radio in the morning. Listen to him. This is not just make-up stuff. They have put policies and programs in place to literally sever you from your property and from your liberties and sovereignty. And they're doing this with your kids. It's mind-boggling how close we are and how little I'm getting from way too many people. Americans need to be able to be real patriots and standing up and supporting the Constitution. Well, we're going into a break, as I am clairvoyant and understanding that the music is now coming and actually playing. So when we come back, I am going to have Mitchell Nicholas Gerber from his own, I forget his organization, but he will be talking about the live Chinese organ harvesting, and you want to listen to this. Maybe this will motivate you. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And folks, as promised, I actually have Mitchell Nicholas Gerber, or I guess your handle is Lionheart. And he's speaking to me from a distant land. And I will let him tell you what, why, and how he's kind of gotten into this awareness campaign, as well as I'll just call it because it's righteous, we can call it a crusade, even though, you know, that kind of has a connotation of Christianity. But anyway, Mitchell, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you, GR. Nice to be here. Thank you, everybody, for having me.
You're more than welcome. As a matter of fact, how did you come across both this atrocity and get involved in this?
Wow. Well, this unspeakable horror that I'm about to share with you today on the program, I came into contact with in 2001 when I was studying international human relations and politics at the University of Georgia as a United States citizen in Atlanta. And I was shocked to hear about these allegations that have been confirmed as we speak since 2006. I didn't know about them in 2001, but I came across this innocent spiritual movement, very similar to Tai Chi or yoga. I was very interested in the Eastern modalities coming from the Western athletic perspective. And this particular group of people, the spiritual group called the Falun Gong, a spiritual movement, a way of life, a meditation, and a mind and body practice, if you will, became the largest spiritual movement in China. One out of every 12 Chinese national citizens were practicing these slow-moving, easy-to-learn, beautiful and healthy exercises, five in total, with a philosophy of being more truthful, compassionate, and tolerant. I came to learn this about this when I was studying in Atlanta. I first tried the exercises, and my goodness, GR, my body just felt at home, spiritually vitalized, rejuvenated. I could breathe better. I can feel better. And I could sleep better. I couldn't believe how miraculously my body changed for the better after practicing the Falun Gong exercises. The energy channels unblock, the organs became really healthy. Like I said, my demeanor, my state of being, my emotional realm, my focus. Everyone wanted to be around me more. I felt like a little bit of a celebrity because of my positive attitude, amplified after practicing the Falun Gong exercises. But I hated to see what was going on in China to these people who practiced Falun Gong particularly, because they were targeted for the persecution and now organ harvesting in the most vilified and dehumanized way.
Okay, so you were working on your degree in Atlanta. You finished your degree, and did you travel to learn about? And I'm gonna get it wrong, and everybody knows I'm really bad with names. But this, I'll call it a faith exercise practice. Did you actually delve into the faith itself, or was it first the exercise, or both, or what?
I come from a Jewish family, so I have my faith in God. I just like the exercises. The faith is universal. It's not a religion. It's a way of life. And Falun Gong just appealed to me and intrigued me because the universal principles of truthfulness and compassion, tolerance, is amplified in all religions, I believe.
Okay.
It's integrated.
So, yeah. So it's kind of like judo, aikido, and there's some martial arts that kind of have a philosophy of how to live and so forth with a balance and all of that. So it's more of a philosophical, not necessarily a deep-rooted religion that converts a lot of people then.
Correct. It's okay. A very spiritual way of life, a mind and body practice, whose universal principles and teachings allow you to be a better person.
And did you travel to get exposed to this?
Not at all. I was at the university. They were having and they were having a human rights festival with different cultures, and There were some Chinese people who were practicing the Falun Gong exercises and raising awareness about the brutal persecution against these innocent group of people. And I happened to just stumble upon it. I loved yoga and Tai Chi and martial arts, and I started to practice, and I immediately felt wonderful.
Okay, so you got exposed to this. You started learning about these abominable practices by the Communist Party in China. And so then what did you do? Did you just go get on a ship and join Greenpeace, or what did you do to get active into this? And if you've got, if you got the time, we got about 5 minutes here. So if you go ahead and tell me, how did you get involved in this?
Well, it's a feeling of when something grips you so deeply and makes you feel like you are compelled to do something, to act. I made this my mission, GR and everybody. I opened up, I established a human rights organization. I went so far as to went around to every single university in the Atlanta to do human rights campaigns, petition drives. I went on talk shows. I went on television shows. I literally created an entire human rights organization at the University of Georgia and Georgia State University, and I would bring people together to raise awareness about this. I also went so far as to receive a death threat from Communist China, and I had to sit down with the Federal Bureau of Investigation in Atlanta, headquartered, because of my efforts to expose this, which I pat myself on the back because you know what? To make such a dent and to make such an impact to Communist China, to get to receive a death threat and spies after you, and to sit down with the Federal Bureau of Investigation, man, it's a job well done, and it makes me feel great.
Right. Because you're making an impact when they actually come after you personally like that. Absolutely. And
Yes.
so I'm gonna say that you still then have this human rights organization that you are running, and I'm gonna say, because there's a lot of other ones out there, I'm gonna say that you've started working with other ones, and you're creating a symbiotic relationship between these other organizations that are focused on bringing light and awareness to this problem.
Yes, and now I have become the advocacy director of StopOrganHarvesting.org, and I also work closely with the main investigators. And I was recently in London bringing the coalition of investigators at a briefing at the UK Parliament in Westminster Abbey, and we were briefing the UK Parliament about this atrocity and the allegations of forced organ harvesting, where at least 100,000 per year, between 60 and 100,000 Falun Gong practitioners have been sent to state-mandated hospitals, their organs cut out of their bodies while alive, and the organs then sold as the healthiest organs in the world illegally without any consent because the exercises of Falun Gong are so healthy. And so I became the advocacy director to expose this on stoporganharvesting.org.
And I've likened this with my audience before, that it's one thing to have a society that has been debased, where our morals have made people think and marginalize life itself, to where a woman actually chooses to abort a child because she doesn't believe that that's a life, it's just fetal tissue, and that's what we've been indoctrinated to believe. But it's completely different when you have the state basically imprison you and then basically compel you by force to die and surrender those life-giving organs that, obviously you're not going to survive after that. And so this is just cannibalistic. It is truly an evil that it's kind of unparalleled when state is doing something to this magnitude.
Absolutely, GR. And to understand how organ harvesting could happen in China, it is crucial to understand that there is no limit to how far the Chinese Communist Party will go to wipe out something or someone. And if I may, ladies and gentlemen, imagine it was your families. Imagine it was you that was under cover of darkness or in the daylight, just ripped from your families, no court, no trial, no nothing, just the secret police, the national police, just come into your home, take you, throw you into a van. Next thing, you're caught in steel containers with hundreds and thousands of Falun Gong practitioners, and your organs ripped out of your bodies and sold. And also, your body's then plastinized and embalmed to be shipped off to the body worlds that are being sold and put on display in different countries around the world for millions of dollars. I mean, this is a billion-dollar industry, industrialized, institutionalized. There is no other government in the world that has done this, except for China. And this is an abomination. This is a new form of genocide. This has been confirmed, and I'm grateful to be on your show, GR, to share with your listeners about this.
No problem. And as a matter of fact, we've got about 30 seconds left. And actually, I still have a few more questions because what we're trying to do here, folks, is I'm just trying to introduce you to the topic at a high level and the person that is delivering this information, which is Mitchell. And so if you wouldn't mind holding over, we'll hold you over for another segment. That way, when we come back, I can kind of explain to the audience why they're going to want to stay attuned to this and the information that'll be forthcoming and how we'll present this. So if you could just hold on real quick and we'll be right back after word from our sponsors, okay? Thank you much.
Yes.
And folks, we will be right back after a couple of minutes and a word from our sponsor. Thank you so much. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. And I will just say this, that if you do want to call in, please don't, because I'm having to pre-record this just to make this a suitable time for myself and Mitchell. But the fact is, I've got Mitchell Nicholas Gerber on the line, and we're talking very specifically about how he got into this humanitarian fight and how he's kind of grown in this and the role that he's playing. And it's an important, it's a critical role. It's a noble role, because there's a lot of times we all have an opportunity to kind of stand up and make a difference. And sometimes it's a big thing, you know, by standing up to a bully, or sometimes it's literally trying to stand up to, you know, a nation like China, which is what Mitchell is doing. And so I appreciate your time, Mitchell, and what I want to do is I'd like to get a little bit more information. So you've created your own organization, and now you're working for other organizations and with other organizations. Is because I understand what it takes, because I've got my own cause here. I understand it takes money to actually make success happen, because you got to be able to travel, you need to be able to support just the perfunctory functions within an organization. So, how did you go about getting the financing, or how did that happen for you?
There was no finance at all. It was strictly out of my own pockets.
Really, at the very beginning, do you have at
At the
this
very
point,
beginning.
or are there mechanisms for people to?
Not at all. That is the nobility of it. That's the no. I've done everything. I worked three or four jobs sometimes, clean toilets, work in grocery stores to save money in order to build a understanding or an awareness. And I've used my Facebook, I've used YouTube, I've used Twitter, I've used Instagram, and I know my colleagues who have built stoporganharvesting.org and other websites like endtransplantabuse.org. It was only out of their own volition, their own pockets. We don't get funded. Even the volunteers, even the two esquires, David Mathis and David Kilgore, they weren't paid to do the investigations. They did it strictly out of their heart's need to get the word out. Because when you are dealing with something so huge, ladies and gentlemen, it touches you. It touches you deeply on a very soul, spiritual, and heartfelt level that you are compelled, regardless of what it takes, to get the word out there. And I ask for no money, I ask for no fame, I ask not for no, for no reward. All I ask for you to let for you to lend me your ears and your heart for me to convey this information. And in the future, as GR says, it's a very serious topic, and it's a very hard to believe and hard to stomach topic.
Right.
But as we go further into it, I will bring on sound bites into your into your your understanding and into your periphery that I've prepared to share with you the testimonies from the gentleman and the lady, Miss World Canada,
Right.
that will share with you. But yeah, everything was made out of my own volition, out of my own enthusiasm.
Right. So folks, what we're going to end up doing is I'm going to be doing several segments, because this is a really a content rich, and this has been going on for over 20 years, or about 20 years. I think it's a little over 20 years that China has started moving and basically taking political prisoners who practice Falun Gong, or I'm really bad at this,
Falun Gong.
Falun Gong. And so what's really important is to try to put this into context for you. I know that I could, just bury you with all this testimony, and if it's not in context, then it doesn't mean anything. And what we'll do in some upcoming episodes is I will do more recordings with Mitchell, and we're going to play some sound bites, and then at the appropriate time, we'll kind of talk and kind of explain who these folks are, what they're doing, what they're talking about, who they're talking to, so that we can put this into context. The other thing I have, and the other question I ask is, Mitchell, do you have room for contributions? Because if people are listening, they go, you know, I ask people all the time to get behind something that you can stand for, and I'm hoping that my audience is standing for the Constitution and contributing to my candidates that are committed to protecting the Constitution. But if there are people that really find that this just shakes their core, they can relate to this, how can they contribute, or how can they help?
The most important, ladies and gentlemen, is your awareness, your discernment. If you are a reporter out there, bring this topic to your news media, your newsroom. If you are a CEO, bring this into your board meetings and say, listen, this has been going on in China. Do I want to do, or do we want to do business with a reign of terror like the communist regime that are killing its citizens for their organs? If you are a lecturer or a college professor and you have a student base of 300 in a class and you're doing ethics or international politics, I would love to be on Skype in your classroom talking to your students about this. That is how you can help us.
Right.
Also, signing a petition. The pen is more mightier than the sword. So it's like signing a petition, like signing a will or signing a check. It's very, very important what you put your name to or signing a contract. You're not just going to sign for under anything. So signing a petition at stoporganharvesting.org is actually positioning your spirit and your heart and your individuality on the right side of destiny in supporting stopping this against the Falun Gong in China.
Right.
And as Albert Einstein said, Gr., the world is a dangerous place to live, not because of the people who are evil, but because of the people who don't do anything about it. Right. And that's why I take my hat off to you and your listeners for listening to me out of their busy days and busy schedules and joining on to this topic today, because it's so serious and so important. So you've helped already.
So one of the things I can throw in, because you didn't mention it, is there's a lot of people that do listen that are a part of the social media. So I'm going to have, and it'll already be when I'm airing this, this actual segment, I will already have on my website the content on the Red State Talk Radio podcast page, as well as my other links page, and this is all on reclaimingtherepublic.org. You can go and get this information, and you can start sharing these links, start sharing these videos from YouTube and other sources on social media, whether you use Twitter, whether you use Facebook, Instagram, any social media that you use, you can share this with your friends. And if you want to be the most informed person, then that's great, because now you can share and inform others, and you can help them become informed and sharing this with others and so forth. Getting a social media campaign would be probably the best way you can help in bringing awareness to this, unless you do have access to other media, other resources, and so forth. And so we have about 3 minutes left of this segment, and I want to maximize this. And so at this point, the one question I want to, before we even get into this, is, and so we get it out there, what will it really take to end this? Because we got, like I said, 2.5 minutes. What will it take to end this?
First of all, most importantly, is the awareness. Like I said, the awareness of the individual citizen to do something about this. Write your congressman. Sign your petitions. But most importantly, understand that the medical associations, the governmental bodies around the world need to pass laws. Israel just passed a law in 2008. They were the first ones to do it. I know there has been rumors of Israel doing organ harvesting, but it is not true, because organ harvesting bans and laws being put into place to stop their own citizens from going to China has been conducted by Israel. The 2008 Israeli organ transplantation law. And in transplantabuse.org, you can actually see the law if you look it up as well. So the people have to pass laws. The Scottish Parliament is actually very close. They passed a tissue law, which prohibits tissue from being bought from other countries, especially China. They can just actually ratify that and amend that to create an organ tourism a law, just like Israel has done, just like Taiwan has done, just like Spain has done, and Italy. But those are only four countries, ladies and gentlemen. Think about it. The problem we have is that there's so much money involved. The military is making money off it. The doctors are making money off it. The governmental bodies are making money off it. Look at the World Health Organization, the United Nations. They are staying silent. But with your help, to expose this with your friends on social media, as GR has said, to write your congresspeople. Even the senators have passed the House of Representatives have passed U.S. resolutions. 19 years this is going on, but still silence, still nothing. But I believe with President Trump is going to do something. I believe so, and I have full faith in his administration. I didn't have it in Obama's, and I did not have it in Hillary Clinton's, but I do have it in his, that there's going to be a big change, and there's going to be, might be a transplantation law that has been passed once more and more people come to hear about this. Okay. We are making history, folks.
All right.
The coalition are making history, and with your help, we're going to make even more so.
Well, let me thank you. We've got about 15 seconds, and so thank you very much for making your time and coming onto the show. And folks, when I come back from the break, I'll give you some of my ideas that I've shared with Mitchell on what I think we should be doing and what we can actually do as a republic and as people individually and as a government. So thank you again for coming on, Mitchell.
Thank you.
You got it. Folks, we'll be right back after word from our sponsors. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VONTRACYDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. And so, as Mr. Gerber, Mitchell, pointed out, that this has been going on for a very long time. And as a matter of fact, I have coming up, what I've done is he sent me a few different audio clips, and some of these actually speak for themselves. And so I've kind of changed my course since I talked to him. I will be having him on, and we will have him back on for my Tuesday segment next week. So make sure you tune in as you can get more information. But what we have coming up is some testimony provided by David Kilgore and David Mattis. So this is kind of like the David Square. Going and providing some detailed report. And this is only a small snippet, folks. I mean, you can go out and start looking on live organ harvesting, and there's two-hour testimonies, and there's all sorts of content, and there are all sorts of people that are being used literally as a tool for
Rather upsetting issue, allegations that have repeatedly been aired that China plays a part in harvesting organs, mainly of executed prisoners. The numbers run to thousands every year. Organs then get sold on for transplants. It's always been vehemently denied by the Chinese government. But here in Britain, representatives of a campaign called Forced Organ Harvesting have been looking at the issue, and they've gone as far as presenting their latest findings to the British Parliament. Two representatives join us here in the studio. Welcome to David Kilgore, former member of the Canadian Parliament, and Ethan Gutman, author of several books on China, who've both been involved in the investigations, are here to tell us a little bit more. David Kilgore, if I could start with you, what are the latest findings of your investigation? What are you closing in on?
That about 65,000 Falun Gong practitioners have been killed and their organs trafficked. There are other people too, convicted prisoners are killed, of course, but the thing that we're focusing on is the Falun Gong community. My colleague Ethan Gutman has done a lot of work on the Uyghur community. He'll probably want to say something about that. But yeah, there's no doubt. We have 52 kinds of evidence that this is happening. To give you the easiest example, the wife of a surgeon told us that her husband had removed the corneas from 2,000 Falun Gong practitioners in a two-year period. So, I mean, there's absolutely no doubt in anybody's mind. We've got two books on it. We've got all kinds of...
And these, here. Just to clarify, these come after judicial executions?
No, there is no judicial involvement in virtually all of the Falun Gong. That's the thing that nobody understands.
Okay, right. So we better clarify this, because we often cover the fact that China, of course, has one of the highest rates of execution, judicial execution. It's their choice. That's what they do. And they're always there in the top three, along with Saudi Arabia and Iran. But this is something different.
Exactly. It's because a police signature is all you need to get sent to a forced labor camp. And then basically what happens is somebody from, it could be London, it could be Canada, goes over there for a liver. And there's a computer bank, and it says there's a match for you out in camp number 50. And somebody's dragged out of camp number 50 into an operating room. Their liver's taken out of them. It's flown to Shanghai, where you're probably waiting for your liver. And you come back to London with a new liver, and somebody has been killed like a lobster in a grotesque restaurant.
Hang on a minute. So you're not even saying, because, I mean, it's one issue, the judicial executions and the use of the cadaver, which I suppose in a certain legal sense is the property of the state once the state has killed the individual. But you're saying these are people being killed to order?
Precisely. And it's so, as you say, your horror shows how distressing it is. But yet it never gets mentioned that these are people who've been maybe giving out pamphlets asking them to stop killing Falun Gong, and they're guilty of nothing.
The allegation and our findings are shocking. I mean, to us, this is a form of evil we have yet to see on this planet. This is a new form of evil. I'm David Matus, and with me is David Kilgore. We've been asked to investigate allegations that there has been harvesting of organs of Falun Gong in China. That the donors, the Falun Gong donors, are unwilling, then they have been executed in the process, either for the purpose of the transplants or after the transplants, and that their bodies are cremated. That was the allegation we were asked to investigate. David Kilgore is a former member of Parliament and former cabinet minister for Asia Pacific, and I'm a Winnipeg lawyer doing immigration, refugee, and international human rights law in Winnipeg. We were asked to investigate this allegation by the coalition it's a coalition investigating allegations of persecution, coalition to investigate the persecution of Falun Gong in China, which is based in Washington, D.C. We were asked to do this a couple months ago, and we have now done our investigation, and we're producing this report. We were not paid. We were doing this as volunteers, and we're not associated officially with anyone. We're just acting independently from everyone and doing this investigation. We pursued every investigative trail we could find. In the report, you will see that there are 18 different avenues of proof and disproof we considered and evaluated. Our bottom line conclusion, after considering everything as best we could, was that the allegations are true. We believe them to be true, that this harvesting is indeed happening. That conclusion comes not from any one of these different 18 categories of evidence that we looked at, but by assessing everything altogether. Altogether, they paint a whole picture. all the evidence we looked at either corroborated the allegations or, in some cases, where we were looking at possible disproof, did not disprove the allegations. We do know for a fact that the Falun Gong are depersonalized, dehumanized, and marginalized, repressed, persecuted, both in word and in deed, in the most vile ways possible. For this sort of allegation to be true in Canada would involve a very large step from where we are. But in China, it's not that big a step from where China has been.
And so that was just the beginning of some of the snippets that he sent. But it makes me ask some questions. And so I think the first question that we all have to start asking is, you've got to put this into context. This has been going on since the late 90s, folks. And this practice has been growing. If you watch some of the testimony, you'll actually, they have a map that they will show you where they're putting up organ transplant hospitals. And these hospitals are like resorts. This is big business, just like he's saying. But this is not big business so that you, with your, you know, Obamacare, you know, healthcare, are going to be able to get, you know, an extension on your life. I mean, in the most morbid way possible, this would be it. And I can't think of any moral person that would ask somebody to be dragged out of their cell so that they could, you know, so that the state will surrender their organs for them and then burn the remains. Because bottom line, it's just a cadaver at that point. And I want you to keep in context, this is actually a human being that has a mother, a father, probably kids, and so forth. So why has this been going on for so long? And there's so little. He only mentioned four countries that have stepped up to try to create some laws to keeping their own citizens from engaging this. But that does not, actually, there's ways to undercut this. Why isn't America supposedly the leader in liberty stepping up and leading on this? This is what I've been saying, that Trump ought to be using this in the trade, if you want to call it trade war, or discussing trade tariffs, imposts, and what have you. He should be putting this in front and saying, you know, China, you don't have any leg to stand on. You are the most despicable government and despotic government, because there's never been a time where this has ever been done. I mean, this actually outshines Nazi Germany, because what they are doing is they are doing this for profit. I don't think lightly of the Holocaust. That was a very morbid and very sick point in time in history. But I do understand prejudices. I do understand deep-rooted hate and so forth. But I do not understand anything, you know, other than this whole financial gain. I mean, maybe some people will look at that as going, yeah, but human life for a financial gain. This is really hard to fathom. And so I think the better question is, why the Falun Gong? And one of the things that's come out is because these people don't smoke, they don't drink, they live very clean lives. In throughout the world, there's another organization that's very similar to that, a religious group. It's called the Mormons. And there's a few other religions that are similar. But I mean, there's millions of Mormons out there. And does that mean that, you know, the next phase, when this grows into an international arena, that anybody that has, you know, because that's the most desirable. If you want a nice, clean organ, an organ that hasn't been, you know, destroyed from years of drinking and smoking and so forth, then you want to have that. And I truly believe that the Prisoners of Opportunity was this large, growing movement, the Falun Gong, or the Falun Gong, and they were literally chosen and selected because of their lifestyle, for the marketability and for the making of money. I will tell you this, we will have more of this on Tuesday next week. This is G.R. Mobley. I am Reclaiming the Republic, and with your help, we'll be able to do this. We can stop all of this insanity and get the federal government back into its framework. I'll be back tomorrow. God bless. Thank you so much. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.